What do we know about Jane Austen and Pride and Prejudice? Beside of the BBC adaptations with Colin Firth, check out the next podcast and find out about Jane Austen and decide whether she was a cliché writer or a bold writer which preceded her time. Dear listeners, hello, my name is Tali and I'm a student at Seminar Kibbutzim. Today we will talk about Jane Austen's novel Pride and Prejudice. We will focus mainly on the atmosphere in which the novel was written. This podcast is appropriate for high school students. It is recommended before listening to read the first 20 pages of the novel or to watch the first episode of the 1995 BBC adaptation, which is available on YouTube. The novel was first published in 1813, 24 years before Queen Victoria was coronated. Let's read together the opening line of Pride and Prejudice. It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. In plain modern-day English, this sentence means everyone knows rich single men want to get married. Even my bad accent doesn't hide the irony of this opening line. Think about who in today's term actively seeks marriage. Is it usually the men? No, it is usually not the men. And that was true in Austen's day as well. In summary, if you just read the opening line of Pride and Prejudice, you will know everything there is to know about the book. There's marriage, there's gossip, there's irony, and wordplay, which really plays into Jane Austen's geniusy, which is also a truth universally acknowledged. But this line keeps us puzzled about Austen, and we are still puzzled today. Did she mean to amuse us, or did she mean to analyze, ironically, her time? The plot tells us about Mr. Bennet, which has 5 daughters and a big problem. None of them are married. There isn't much fortune to go around, and thanks to the quirk of English property law, they'll all be kicked out of their house when Mr. Bennet dies. The Bennets belong to the gentry social class, or the landed gentry. What is the British gentry? This was a land-owning class which derived its income from renting its lands to tenants who did the actual work on the land. The gentry were positioned below the aristocracy or nobility, although many were just as wealthy, if not more so. Following a landowner's death, the property went to the eldest son. This strict law is also called primogeniture, or in other words, preference of the oldest son. And this is how it is described. Following a landowner's death, the property went to the eldest son. If there were no male heir, the land would revert to a male relative, although in some rare cases, women did inherit. Today, it seems as strongly unfair to both younger brothers and to sisters. Because of those strict inheritance law, which prevented women from inherit their father, Eleanor and Marian Dashwood, the protagonists of Austen's earlier book, Sense and Sensibility, remained practically homeless after their father's death, and the refusal of their uncle to share his wealth with them. Austin tells us about another new social class which began to appear during her time. Those were called Novaricious, and they are expressed in the book by Mr. Bingley and his two sisters. Mr. Bingley's father made his money out of merchant. They didn't own any nobility title, but in many cases they were richer than the aristocracy. Mr. Bingley's younger sister is chasing Mr. Darcy, a young and extremely wealthy man. This is a paradox. Although her father is very rich, she needs to find herself a rich husband in order to live well, because her brother will inherit their father. Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Both Mr. Bingley and Mr. Darcy will fall in love with the Bennet sisters, which were neither nobility nor rich. It is for the reader to decide whether the author merely tries to amuse him or whether she analyzes her culture with a piercing feather. When the novel Pride and Prejudice was published in 1813, people were still getting used to the idea that women would do something so totally immodest and exhibitionist as to actually have strangers reading something they wrote for money. Oh, how shocking and taboo! Just one step away from prostitution, and I'm not joking about that. Because of all that, the novel came out anonymously, and her book, Sense and Sensibility, only a year earlier. Not only was it a big deal for women to be author, but it was also kind of a foregone conclusion that everyone would think that their novels were automatically kind of silly and chick-lit. You know, not like men novels, with their deep thoughts and serious subjects. Especially when your novel, like Austin's, was essentially about marrying off a bunch of sisters. Austin made fun of those expectations in a letter she wrote to her sister. Pride and Prejudice is rather too light and bright and sparkling. It wants shade. It wants to be stretched out here and there with a long chapter about something unconnected with the story. An essay on writing, a critic on Walter Scott, or the history of Bonaparte, or anything that would form a contrast and bring the reader with increased delight to the playfulness of the general style. In reality, the novel deals with plenty of its own deep thoughts and serious subjects. At the turn of the century, the old debate between rationality and emotion was heating up again. The 18th century has been the age of enlightenment, making sense of life in a super scientific, man-centered, non-religious way. These enlightenment ideas about the rights of men and the value of individual got a bunch of people fired up in the American colonies, and pretty soon they were doing it up democracy style across the Atlantic. And just across the English Channel, the French Revolution led to an overthrow of the entire monarchy. Kings all over Europe were making sure their heads were still attached to their necks. Austin was no dummy, and it's no coincidence that characters spend a lot of time debating whether they're supposed to be making decisions based on reason and rationality, or feelings and impressions. These were high-stakes questions for individuals as well as nations, especially educated women who suddenly looked around and said, "Hey, how come we don't get to own property? How come earning our own money is somehow disreputable? How come we have no rights or political power? How come we're supposed to be all quiet and not talk or think, even though we have brains?" Austin was writing just as the 18th century was turning into the 19th, way before Queen Victoria gets on the throne and buttons the whole country up to the neck. And Austin certainly has no way of knowing that this is what's coming up next. Instead, let's think about her time period, the Regency. In England, the guy on the throne is the Prince Regent, who later becomes George IV. He's a fun-loving kind of a guy, and it's good times for the aristocracy who go a little nuts with the luxury. It's a stressful time for them as well, though, since England is at war in America on one side, and Napoleon is rampaging through Europe on the other. Everyone, well, all the aristocrats anyway, is really, really keeping their fingers crossed that England doesn't go the way of France. How does this context play out in the novel? For example, all those massing soldiers and the militia, they're about to ship out to fight. That really puts a damper on the whole sexy men in uniform thing. So, to sum all the above, what is Pride and Prejudice about, and why should I care? Parents are so embarrassing, right? Not to mention your little sisters. Well, yeah, and they have been for at least 200 years. Pride and Prejudice matters because, unlike a lot, okay, most of novels published around the turn of the 19th century, it's about everyday people doing everyday things in everyday places. Like being humiliated by their parents, or having a hard time telling their crush how they feel, or finding themselves attracted to someone who's kind of embarrassing. Sounds familiar? Elizabeth Bennet thinks so, too. Sure, Pride and Prejudice is full of $10 words and long sentences, but it's about real people living lives just, okay, almost like yours. Because Jane Austen just about invented English language novels. Sure, there was prose fiction before Austen, but it was mostly wild and crazy. People going on strange voyages, having lots of unbelievable adventures, and doing outrageous and totally impossible things. Think adventures like Gulliver's Travels or Treasure Island. And trashy gothic novels. The 18th century is full of it. Austin was pretty much the first writer to say, "Hey, you know what else is interesting? Our actual, universal, lived experiences. How people interact with one another and how relationships happen or don't. In other words, pretty much everything that isn't about vampires or zombies or desert islands comes straight from her. And that's worth caring about." Thank you for listening.